My name is Brian Edward Roberts. My Christian name, first name, is spelt B-R-Y-O-N, which is highly unusual. My father went to the registry office and my mother wanted to call me Brian, which was quite a popular name at the time. My father, thinking that we had Welsh links, thought Byron would be better, and he ended up not making his mind up, but I ended up with a hybrid name, and there are not many about in the world because I've looked about, it's on the computer. Anyway, I was born in the middle of a snowstorm and my mother went into labour, and of course what is commonly forgotten is there was no emergency. When I was born, no emergency ambulance service, there's no blood transfusion, no antibiotics. And what my father did, he ran over to Scarce's, the fish and chip shop, and got Mr. Scarce to get his motorbike and sidecar. And my mother, suffering severe labour pains, ended up in the sidecar, being transported to the maternity hospital in Hyde Terrace in a snowstorm. So that's how I began.
And where were your mum and dad living then?
If you want the straight story, my mother and father had to get married in the November and lived with my Auntie Nellie at 16 Bakishlup Place. She was also pregnant with my cousin Shirley, who was born the following May. And so I was born there. I was born in Leeds Maternity Hospital, came home, and my cradle was a clothes basket. And then my father, I can remember, he told me this cottage became available behind the Midland pub. It's now demolished, but it was a cottage right down at the bottom. It had one cold water tap, and that was it. And there was gas in, so there would be gas mantles, but there was just one cold water tap, and obviously a range, cooking range, and all the hot water was heated on that.
What's your earliest memory, then, of that house and what was happening around about you then?
Well, I've got several memories. One is that my father, when he used to work on the day shift, and when I was about three or four, I would walk up Quarry Road onto the road and wait for the day shift coming out. And what would happen is all the miners would come out in one group and would walk up through Woolsford in almost a procession, all in clogs and things. And I used to, in those early days, call my father Bon because of the noises his clogs made when he was coming home. So lots of the miners would go into the Midland pub for a drink. My father used to come home with me down to the house. It was a house, of course, down at the bottom of a hill. And so when it rained heavy, it tended to flood. So I have another memory of my uncle. I mean, all the family came down when it flooded to help out. And I have a memory of sitting in a tin bath and my uncle sailing me around the house in a tin bath. The other thing is, when you go the other way, you get up onto the Eshels. There, down back at the place, was my grandmother, Auntie Nellie, Cousin Shirley, Terry Parkinson, and they were my friends. So I used to walk on my own. I don't think my mother, at a very sort of early age, over around there to go and play. And I still remember Terry Parkinson, who was a daredevil then, going down that hill, coming down towards it, from the Eshels on bicycles and various other things. But so that's where it started. My next memory was of my sister being born. She was born at home. I remember this lady coming in a dark coat and so on, was obviously a midwife, with a case, and went upstairs. And I remember, of course, there were quite a few aunts and uncles around, and they said, there's a little baby in that bag, and she's taking it up to give to your mother, so you're going to have a brother and sister soon. So I can remember that story. I was only just turned two then, so...
What about growing up? Where did you go to school? What are your memories of your friends and what you did at school?
I went to Woodlesford Council School, a very good school where it is, and I remember going to the primary school, and there was another lad called Terry McIlroy, and everybody raced down to the... well, it wasn't a gents' toilet, to the toilet for the boys, and I remember this lad called McIlroy shouting, "First in, first out, first to get my willy out." I can remember that. That was sort of on the first day or two. And the other vivid memory I had was of the school teacher. Our teacher was called Miss Stowe. Now, I always thought for a long time it was Miss, you know, but it was obviously S-T-O-W, I should have thought. I can remember her, and we were doing some writing and so on, and we needed a rubber cleaning. So she lifted up a skirt and she got those knickers that came right down to there and cleaned the rubber on her knickers and handed it back. So I can remember that very vividly.
How old were you when you went to school?
About three.
But what about the kind of wider village? Did you go to the railway station? Did you go down to the pit when you were growing up?
Well, we went all over, because, I mean, in those days, as soon as we were free, we went to join our friends. So I didn't go on the train very much. I remember going on it with my Uncle Jack to a rugby league match at Hunslet, and I remember going with Uncle Norman to an exhibition of model trains in Leeds, but otherwise didn't go on it. But then we wandered all over. Now, the impression I have of Waterhaig, what Pitt was, always all over with the big muck stacks and the muck being emptied all the time. But we used to go down Fleet past the pits, and then near the road there were all these the warm water, which I think had come out the pit baths, and some of that would go swimming that actually, and then went down towards where the canal and the River Aire met, and the old gaunt mill there, it's been knocked down since. And that sort of always frightened me. It's come back as a dream from time to time. I mean, it was... But that was the village of Fleet. I was told that my father spent... You know, father's family was down there at one time in the village of Fleet. That's totally disappeared. But but there was a village there. And, of course, in the era of the canal, then there was much more going on there. When you see the records from Rothwell and places, you know, there were pubs on the side of it, and it was a sort of a highway. And I think my great-grandfather would get lifts going to Castleford and so on the barges. So I think there are a lot more, you know, there's a way of life down there on the canal that's totally forgotten. But, you know, there are pubs associated with the canal for the bargees and that sort of thing.
What about your grandfather, Roberts? Did you see him very much? Did you have much to do with him?
My grandfather was a sort of quite taciturn individual. Well, in a family of 12, all in the same house. My grandfather was head of the household. He brought the money home, got dressed up and went out. And when I say dressed up, when he went out at night, he'd have a suit, a starched white collar and a white front and a tie and probably a Homburg hat, and went out for a drink and a game of dominoes. He went to the Midland. Yeah. And he did it all his life. And the other thing he was very interested in was racehorses and racing. So his favourite pastime, really, was to go to the races, particularly Pontefract races. You know, there have been books by Roy Hattersley about life in the working classes and all this total squalor, but it wasn't like that at all. I mean, as far as I can see, the house was always spotless. That's number one. Grandmother Roberts was the manager. One daughter always stayed at home to look after the house while she really produced babies. And Grandfather Roberts, his job was to bring the money in, and he would allocate some money. And then his sort of a miner's life was to go join other miners outside, and they lived that sort of life. It was a very, you know, there was a very well-known social pattern of the mother being the manager of the household, running it, doing everything towards it, while the husband brought the money in, and he was fed and watered, and that was it. And I was saying, there's this impression of squalor and so on and so forth, but it wasn't like that. And, I mean, I came home some in the not-too-distant past, and I said, oh, I've just brought this Burberry. And you know, I've been asking father, since your grandfather had one of those, you see. So, you know, if you can imagine Grandfather Roberts dressed up with a white tie, white collar, tie, and a Burberry coat. Now, he was a, you know, first-class miner, and I've heard Billy Williams' father say how good he was, because, you know, he got the coal out, I mean, beyond his back, picking away, but, I mean, he was very good at it. He was an administrator of justice as well. If any of them did anything wrong, they got a belting from him, you see. But on the other hand, I never, ever really had a lengthy conversation because he wasn't a conversationalist.
So you weren't friendly, you didn't sit on his knee and talk to him about his past.
He sat in the corner and went, oh, did you... And he never took... You know, he'd no conversation at all.
Was Grandfather Roberts a political man as well, no, like your father?
No.
And were you conscious of your father's political activity in that time in the 1930s?
I mean, the two big things that happened, which I've been told about, don't remember too much about, but of course my father was involved in two accidents. One, he hurt his foot very badly, and the other one, the roof of the pit came in and fractured his skull. So you know, and he looked out of the ward of the infirmary and saw the Civic Hall being built. Those were two big events, but, I mean, it did change the pattern of our household when my father was elected as the branch secretary of the NUM. Can't remember too much detail, but then he wasn't in so much. He was out at meetings and so on and so forth.
So what I'm trying to get at is that from what your father told you, the spark for his political activity was there from when? From when he was a very young man, or did it come on him around the period he was injured?
I don't know whether he had any political interest, to be quite honest. I think what happened was somebody said, why don't you put up for the union secretary? So he did. And I think he was a bit surprised when he was elected. But therefore, he was involved in politics after that. But I'm not sure if he had a political interest or leaning or argued about it before that at all. So I was too young, really, because, I mean, it was mid-30s he was elected, very young.
So once he became involved in the union, once he was elected into the union branch, he was kind of like a practical politician. Is that he wasn't an ideological politician?
No, never was. Never, ever a left-wing Labour politician, ever. If I was going to say what my father's political beliefs were, his bringing up, it was sort of all to do with a Protestant work ethic and so on. So there was no radicalism or left-wing whatsoever.
So in terms of the way that that affected you and your sister and your mother, it wasn't that significant, was it? I mean, did he disappear for long periods of time?
Well, it wasn't long after that, too long after that, when he was elected to the council, and that made quite a bit of difference. And then sometime after that, I mean, I remember the other thing I remember him doing, though, was to work. He went to technical college and he got his deputy certificate or under-managed certificate, something like that. Not long after that, I think, he was appointed as a union inspector. So he stopped being an active miner and went round visiting all the local pits, looking at their safety from a union point of view. So he was a union safety inspector.
Did his political activity have an effect on you, in other words, with what the other children in the village said to you?
Oh, yes.
Like what?
Like the fact that everybody knew who I was. There was no anonymity, whatever I did. I realised that if, for example, I sort of transgressed, I got into bother with the police or anything like that, or whatever, then it wouldn't be ordinary. It would be son of so-and-so does done this. It's terrible. I mean, particularly when I was at Rothwell Grammar School, and, I mean, another councillor was the head of headmaster. And, I mean, you know, we had mock elections expected to me to lead it on behalf of the Labour Party. So let's let there be no mistake. Living locally and being the son, first of all, of a councillor, and then, well, the local MP came a bit later, but you know, everybody knew my father, and they knew me. I mean, even, mind you, when I was in the village, when I told you when I was about 3 or 4, I walked up, they used to shout to me, "Now then, young Albert, it's Albert's lad." I mean, I was always known as Albert Roberts' lad, that's who you were. And so there's no, but then when my father, you know, got more prominence, there was no escape at school or anywhere, and it was not easy for either myself or my sister, quite honestly.
And did you get into fights as a result of that?
No, not that. No, I didn't. I might have done if it had been a Conservative MP. No, it was, everyone was on the same side, but you were just known, everybody knew who I was.
So you're growing up, you would be 7 at the start of the war, roughly speaking. So what was Woodlesford like that during that period at the start of the war?
Wasn't much different, actually, for the simple reason most of the men were at home because they were miners. That's number one. But Terry Parkinson, who lived probably 12 back Ishlop Place, my grandmother was 8, and I'm sure he lived at 16. And his father worked for the council, I think, and his mother always thought they were cut above the average mines because he worked for the council. But he went down in the Lancastria, and so she was widowed. And she had quite a job bringing Terry up one way or another. So, but that was the major impact of the war from that point of view.
So how did your life develop then?
Well, I went to Woodlesford Council School, and the teachers were excellent. And the men and women, because, of course, there was a problem, most of the men were in the war, But it was Mrs. Menzies who taught me, and she was excellent. And an episode that really affected my life, and that was my Auntie Deli, our Shirley's mother, senior sister, you know, of the brothers and sisters, senior member of the family, had a quiet word with me, sort of career advice. And she said, look, Brian, she said, I have to tell you, it won't be too long before you're leaving school, which would have been 14. But she said, I have to tell you, you know, this is a pit in the quarry, but she said, there'll probably be a very good job going at the Co-op. She said, when you leave school, there's a job, and you ride this bike around with this delivery, and you deliver stuff from the Co-op. She says, now, if you get that, and they like you, you might get a job as a shop assistant at the Co-op. Now, I was supposed to be about 8 at the time, and I mean, if my father, as he did, encouraged me positively, that bit of advice, oh my God, and if ever, so I got down to make sure I got through my 11, well, it wasn't the 11 plus then, because she had to be 10, actually, and I just got through 2 weeks after my 10th birthday. So the trouble was, when I went to school, I was very young, but so I did that, and I got absolute great help at that. I mean, Mrs., you know, the teaching was absolute first rate. The headmaster was a man called Wright, and he was an aggressive chap at Woodlesford Council School, and I said something to him, well, I have to say that you've managed to go through Robert's or something or other. But in those days, there was a big honours board in his primary school honours board for all those who got through their 11 plus, and so the name was there in gold letters.
And did your father encourage you in terms of education?
Oh, wow. I mean, the last thing he wanted me to do was go down the pit, which was what you did. Yeah, I got maximum encouragement, so there's no doubt about that.
And would you say that was true of the other kids at Woodlesford at that time?
Well, you see, what the 11 plus did was it acted as a sieve. The previous generation, there hadn't been 11 plus. What it did, it sieved off all the bright ones who tended then to move out of Woodlesford. Now, you get that sieving on a regular basis. Then, not Woodlesford now, not people who moved in, but in general, of course, it did separate, if I might say, the wheat from the chaff, so that those who were bright enough went to grammar school and then would go off to various places. And so, in actual fact, it changed the population mix of Woodlesford. I mean, you know, the big event for me getting to the age of about 15 was getting interested in cricket. So I spent hours at Alton Cricket Club, which was, first of all, Waterhate Cricket Club, because it was sponsored by... It was all the property belonged to the... Well, it would be then the National Coal Board. So, and Billy Williams ran it, really. It never came, but, I mean, you know, the groundsman was employed by the colliery. So, and when I look at the team that I was in and the background, then there was me, who subsequently went into medicine. Well, I was still playing there when I went to the medical school. There was the two Glazebrook brothers. Their father was Colonel Glazebrook in Alton. And then there was Brian Edwards, who became a first division footballer, and quite a few others, like Brian Walton, who became an accountant. And so there was a complete mix. That was a village mix, as it was in those days. And so between middle class, future middle class, working class, or whatever. So there was a mix. Let's put it this way, with all that sense of humour, no matter where I've got in the medical profession, when it all gets back down to it, my humour's a minor sense of humour. I mean, that hasn't changed. So there's a lot of the minor in me from my attitudes to all sorts of things, because I was brought up in the atmosphere. The other thing that's happened in the social evolution was that my mother and father, without any doubt whatsoever, I mean, were working class. They belonged to all the big families, and looking around, Audrey's mother and father came from big families. I did. My father was one of 12, and so on and so forth. And that was the pattern about that time. And so they're all working class. But there moved through members of that working class a desire to become middle class. And this desire to become middle class was vented upon the children. And that's why the 11 plus was, in many ways, became so unpopular. I mean, there's a lad at the bottom of North End called Godfrey Poskett. His mother and father pay for him to go to Wakefield Grammar School to the prep school there, and he didn't get through, and he had to come back down to an elementary school, and think tragedies like that. So there's enormous pressure on us all, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was, yeah.
Absolutely enormous pressure. And it wasn't encouragement, it was pressure. You have to, through the children, they had to demonstrate that, we were basically middle class. And that happened to my father, not to many, but it happened to my father, and quite a few up North Lane I can think of, and lots of children. Some of them had their lives blighted, basically, by the fact that they hadn't got through the 11 plus, because that let the family down, and all that. And so there was this great atmosphere of self-improvement, desire to become the middle class. That's why an organisation called the Young Conservatives, not that I was very popular, because they got their kids to join to show where they were. And so there was this social change.
Did your dad have anything politically to do with the grammar school? Because it was established before he became a councillor, wasn't it?
Oh, 1933.
Yes.
And the thing about it is this, that it's quite interesting that grammar schools like that were built with the strong support and initiative of the Labour Party and of two major seminal figures in the Labour Party movement. One was Sidney Webb, and the other one was not Trelawney, but something like that, who wrote a book called The Ragged Trouser Philanthropist. And it was their idea. The idea was that there should be these grammar schools built that let children be together of equal ability but of different social backgrounds. It was that Crossland who had no idea, because he came from a middle-class background, who destroyed it. And really, that's what it was all about.
I presume that once you went to the grammar school in
43.
Did your connection with the Woodlesford village begin to ebb away as such, and did your interests, you would have become interested in science and medicine in that period of time, or were you conscious of being part of the community when you were still at the grammar school?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we did get shouted at, what do they call you, a grammar school snob or something or other, and you would say, right, well, you're elementary pig wash, that's what we used to turn around. And so that was there, but nevertheless, I stayed in with all the people I knew and with the gangs and things, with the boys and girls, and grew up. The big change was when I went to university. But at grammar school, no.
What else can you tell me about other characters around in Woodlesford? People at the pit, for instance.
One thing, nobody had a car, so that mother and father would take son and daughter and go for a walk in the village, go walk around the fields, working up fields and so on. And then you would meet people. And so everybody was walking. And so I knew Billy Williams' father because I bumped into him with my father. My father told me all about him and how he thought my grandfather was a good miner. But then Billy Williams, then we knew where he lived, and there used to be a field next to the Ritz Cinema. It's now built on, but we used to go play football in there, and he used to come and chase us out, you see, and shout at us and things. And then he had a son called Robin Williams. And he was a lad who couldn't mix, wasn't allowed to mix in with the village, you see, because he was the colony manager's son. And it was a great shame, and we all called him Pie Face Williams. But so that was that. So he came to chair. But I mean, he got on well with my father. I mean, he always used to give my father a couple of pheasants at Christmas after he'd been out shooting. So, there's a good relationship there. But I mean, all I remember is chasing out of this field. Then I qualified in medicine and I was a house physician to Dr. Towers. And one of the things he did, he referred his private patients to his own clinic to get a whole lot of investigations done on the NHS so they didn't have to pay for them privately, you see. Not strictly according to the rules. So anyway, I'm sitting in outpatients, you see, waiting to see the next patient. Who should come in but Billy Williams? It was amazing, really. Anyway, I mean, it just gave me a very short history and had to fill out all these forms to send me for x-rays and ECGs and things. But
he know who you
were? Oh, absolutely. I knew me. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yes, there's no question about it. Everybody knew each other, you see. Yeah. So there's no escape.